Hey, good evening. Thank you for joining me here on Rucksack Radio. It's Thursday, June 23rd, 2022, and I'm live here, the podcast for Patriots, hosted by two veterans with one mission and 1776 reasons. The podcast that is always bold, blunt, uncensored, and full of red, white, and blue truth. Phil is he's working late tonight, so he's not going to be with me tonight. He'll be back tomorrow, though, for our fun Friday show with Jenny. That'll be a good time tomorrow night. Tonight, really, I want to talk kind of pretty much at length about the Supreme Court case today that involved gun control. New York gun law. So it was New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, the superintendent of New York State Police. It was basically the state of New York made it a crime to possess a firearm without a license, whether inside or outside of the home. And an individual wanted to carry a firearm outside of their home could obtain an unrestricted license to have a concealed carry pistol or revolver, if they could prove proper cause existed for doing so. And so that was the challenge by the defendant, that the proper cause was a second tier restriction, that it infringed on constitutional rights. And it did. And the Supreme Court overturned that. They knocked down New York's law requiring that. So, of course, liberals are losing their minds today, and we'll get into that. I'll get into that a little bit later. But I want to spend some time on the opinion, because there's some really good stuff in there. And I honestly think that this opinion will probably go down. This is written by Clarence Thomas. And I honestly think that this will be an opinion that goes down as his best ever. It's a lengthy opinion. It's 135 pages. I've only been able to get through maybe 30 or 40 pages, which is still quite a bit of it. But I've kind of bounced around. I've wanted to read some of his opinion, and I wanted to read some of the dissent as well, to be able to, explain in this show a little bit about where both sides of the court were kind of coming in on this. But I will end up reading the entire opinion, because what I've read so far, it'll be a landmark case, kind of like Heller was for gun rights, which makes it a very important case. It's substantial. There's a lot of language in there that is very important and very big, and I'm going to get into that. So let's start with, kind of the opening of Clarence Thomas's, first paragraph or so of his opinion of the court, of the majority. Said in District of Columbia versus Heller and McDonald versus Chicago, we recognize that the Second Amendment and 14th Amendments protect the right of an ordinary law-abiding citizen to possess a handgun in the home for self-defense. In this case, petitioners and respondents agree that ordinary law-abiding citizens have a similar right to carry handguns publicly for their self-defense. We, too, agree and now hold, consistent with Heller and McDonald, that the Second and 14th Amendments protect an individual's right to carry a handgun for self-defense outside of the home. The parties nevertheless dispute whether New York's licensing regime respects the constitutional right to carry handguns publicly for self-defense. In 43 states, the government issues licenses to carry based on objective criteria. But in 6 states, including New York, the government further conditions issuance of a license to carry on a citizen's showing of some additional special need. Because of the state, this court case, the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, opinion of the Court of New York issues a public carry licenses only when an applicant demonstrates a special need for self-defense, we conclude that the state's licensing regime violates the Constitution, which it does. And this is huge. And this will result in other states, like California is one of them. There's another one, maybe it's Massachusetts, I'm not sure, up in the Northeast. There's six total that have similar restrictions. And this will knock those down. This will bring challenges to those laws, rightfully so. And based on Supreme Court precedent, those laws will now go away. So it won't be immediate. It's going to be a process in whatever state you're in. And it doesn't by any means, like, you know, Kathy Holcomb or whatever, Hochul or Yokel, whatever her name is today in New York said, well, it basically means anybody can carry anywhere at any time. No, it doesn't. So if people just go out and carry now and they get busted for it illegally, I hope that they go back and say, well, the governor said this is what it means. Because that's not what it means. These people, you still have to go through the concealed carry permitting process. You just don't have to show cause. You don't have to show like there's some imminent threat against your life. Because in this day and age, anything can be a threat at any time. So that's what it does. The state will still have a concealed carry license, and states still can, as Justice Thomas indicated, 43 states have that. Wisconsin has that. I had to send in for a permit to get a concealed carry license. I got it back in a couple of weeks, and, you know, I have it. They expire every, you know, 5 or 6 years or something, and you have to have them renewed, and that's it. But there could be a point in time in which something like that is challenged, because is that a burden to have to renew, you know, a license every so often once you go through it once? I don't know. But the point being, now in New York, you don't have to demonstrate that there's a threat to your life, that the state gets to subjectively decide if it is or isn't a threat to you before you can have a legal right to carry on your person in defense of yourself. So it's a huge win. Of course, it's creating a huge stir, but let me kind of move on a little bit in this opinion, because again, there's some great stuff in here. You know, Thomas writes further, and Heller and McDonald, we held that the Second and 14th Amendments protect an individual's right to keep and bear arms for self-defense. In doing so, we held unconstitutional two laws that prohibited the possession and use of handguns in the home. In the years since, the courts of appeals have coalesced around a two-step framework for analyzing Second Amendment challenges that combines history with means and scrutiny. Today, we decline to adopt that two-part approach. In keeping with Heller, we hold that when the Second Amendment's plain text covers an individual's conduct, the Constitution presumptively protects that conduct. To justify its regulation, the government may not simply posit that the regulation promotes an important interest. Rather, the government must demonstrate that the regulation is consistent with this nation's historical tradition of firearms regulation. If a firearm regulation is consistent with this nation's historical tradition, may a court conclude that the individual's conduct falls outside of the Second Amendment's unqualified command. So, just saying again there that that second part approach, that there's this extra level of scrutiny, isn't constitutional and is not consistent with the Second Amendment. So then Heller, we began with a textual analysis focused on the normal and ordinary meaning of the Second Amendment's language. That analysis suggested that the amendment's operative clause, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, guarantees the individual right to possess and carry weapons in case of confrontation that does not depend on service in the militia. And that is straight. You've heard me talk about that many times on this show. The right to bear arms, you know, regulated militia or serving in a militia wasn't a prerequisite to the right to bear arms. The right to bear arms came first. That was the innate part of this. I wrote a whole article on this not long ago. Again, you can find that on rucksackradio.com. It's titled, What Second Amendment Opponents Get Wrong About, you know, Gun Control or About Gun Rights. Thomas goes on to say that from there, we assessed whether our initial conclusion was confirmed by the historical background of the Second Amendment. This is big. Says, we look to history because it has always been widely understood that the Second Amendment codified a pre-existing right. The amendment was not intended to lay down a novel principle, but rather codified a right inherited from our English ancestors. After surveying English history dating from the late 1600s, along with American colonial views leading up to the founding, we found no doubt on the basis of both text and history that the Second Amendment conferred an individual right to keep and bear arms. Like that, and that's clear as day. I have talked about history so much on this show, right? And we go back to where the amendment comes from and where the Constitution comes from. And it comes from the debates of the Constitutional Convention, which were the deliberations of the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. And as you read through all of those hundreds of pages of documents of the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, you see these arguments that make it clear as day that the right to bear arms was not something that was limited, that it was an innate right that they expected people have. It's very clear. Which makes it so upsetting to me when people get, I mean, again, people that don't like this, all you can argue all day long that you don't like it, that you don't agree with it, that you want it to be something else, but to argue that it's something other than what it is disingenuous, it's intellectually dishonest, and for me, that's where conversations stop. If you can't at least acknowledge the premise of truth, where the point of contention starts from, then there's not a discussion to have beyond that, because then I'm arguing with something that doesn't exist. I'm arguing with a fallacy. I'm arguing with your feelings. I'm not arguing with an objective point of view. I'm going to talk about that a little bit too. I tried today to get a couple of people on this show tonight to kind of debate this very topic, because there's an awful lot of people out there that are speaking against it, but none of them seem to have the spine to want to debate it publicly. So go figure. Thomas went on again to say that when we canvassed the historical record and found yet further confirmation that history included analogous arms-bearing rights in state constitutions that preceded and immediately followed adoption of the Second Amendment. And it's right. Virginia was one, for example. The states had their own state constitutions in place prior to a federal united constitution over the whole states. And these state constitutions included rights to bear arms. Thomas goes on to finish up in his thoughts. And he says, you know, to be sure, historical analysis can be difficult. It sometimes requires resolving threshold questions and making nuanced judgments about which evidence to consult and how to interpret it. But reliance on history to inform the meaning of constitutional text, especially text meant to codify a pre-existing right, in our view, more legitimate and more administratable than is more legitimate and more administratable than asking judges to make difficult empirical judgments about the costs and benefits of restrictions, especially given their lack of expertise in a field. So, and he's exactly right. The judge's job isn't to legislate. And that's where the left gets this stuff wrong all the time. If you want laws changed or things different about your laws, you go through your legislatures. The courts are making decisions based upon historical context, based upon the Constitution. Thomas, and this was just, I just wrote I read a couple of paragraphs from his opinion. Again, the whole opinion, including both for the majority opinion and the dissent, the whole thing is 135 pages, including forget the part they call it at the beginning, but the abstract in the beginning that talks about the syllabus or whatever, talks about the history of the case, really. So there's a lot in there, but it's just what I've read so far is absolutely, I'm impressed. I think it'll go down as one of the best written opinions in the history of the Supreme Court, and certainly probably the best of Clarence Thomas's career. Just amazing report. Now, there was dissent, of course. Justice Breyer and Sotomayor and Kagan, they dissented. The three liberal justices dissented, and their dissent is 56 pages of that 135. And It's basically 56 pages of CNN narratives. Because let me tell you how their dissent starts. And this is how you know that it's not based, that they didn't do, that they're not looking at this case based upon the context, the framework of the Constitution and the framework of people's rights, which is concerning because they're Supreme Court justices. So they should be unbiased and looking at things in terms of what is constitutional and what is unconstitutional. But their argument, their very first paragraph, and indeed much of the 35 pages as I scanned through it, goes to this right. Their first paragraph, this is how it starts. In 2020, 45,222 Americans were killed by firearms. See the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Fast Facts. Since the start of this year, there have been 277 reported mass shootings, an average of more than one per day. Gun violence has now surpassed motor vehicle crashes as the leading cause of death among children and adolescents. Now, before I go on, right there, we know their argument is just one. It has nothing to do with the facts of rights, right? It's this whole other piece that there's a merit in discussing the effects of gun violence. It's, of course, a discussion that we need to have, because if we're going to fix it appropriately and within keeping everybody's rights, we need to understand what the effects are. But you're going to see a lot of people out there. I've seen a lot of people make this case that now in the last year, guns are now responsible for more childhood deaths than automobiles, which cars were responsible for more child deaths over the last 60 years. And this is the first time in history. Well, there's a reason for that. A big reason for that, too, is sheer numbers. Automobile accidents in general are down because for 2 years, nobody was driving. A lot of people were off the roads. Kids were held. They were schooling at home. They weren't outside. You know, people were locked down, right? So it's not hard to see that there's not a common denominator there. The denominator changed if there's, say, the number of people driving on the road is 5 million 1 year, and suddenly the next year it's 1 million, you're not comparing apples to apples. You want to compare it as a percentage to the whole, it's not going to be the same. But they don't. But they don't consider that. So of course, you know, as you have mainly in inner cities, people firing. Yeah, the majority of kids that are killed are by gun violence are killed in these inner city shootings, whether it's drive-bys, or it's in neighborhoods, or bullets flying through houses. It's children, so it's up to 17-year-old gangbangers on the streets getting shot in gang violence. It's not like these kids that are all getting killed are 8-year-olds on the street, although there's plenty of those as well. But so they appeal to this emotion, but it's not a relative barometer. But just have that for your arguments because you're going to get it with some liberals that are going to say, well, you know, automobile accidents were the leading cause of death for kids for 60 years, and now it's guns. Well, there's the denominator is different. There weren't as many kids, you know, there haven't been as many kids in automobiles for the last, you know, 24 months as there were. I guarantee you that in 24 more months, it will be automobiles again. Because it's math, and that's how math works. And statistically speaking, you put more kids and people in cars and more cars on the road, there's going to be more accidents, there's going to be more deaths from accidents. That's how it works. They go on in their dissent here to say that many states have tried to address some of the dangers of gun violence just described by passing laws that limit in various ways who may purchase, carry, or use firearms of different kinds. The court today severely burdens the state's efforts to do so. Let me read that again. Many states have tried to address some of the dangers of gun violence, just described, by passing laws that limit in various ways who may purchase, carry, or use firearms. That in itself is unconstitutional, and you're admitting it in your very dissent. You're using language that doesn't respect the right of people to carry arms. Shall not be infringed. That's what, as I read through the dissent, I'm like, it, and it's full of this for 30 or for 56 pages. It's just a lot of this over and over again. It's the same liberal talking points you hear on the news. It's frustrating. And they go on to say that the court wrongfully limits its analysis to focus nearly exclusively on history. Well, yeah, that's how the Supreme Court works. It looks at the history of our rights and amendments and how they've been upheld. It's upsetting. So they go on here. Kagan says, in my view, when courts interpret the Second Amendment, it should be constitutionally proper, indeed often necessary, for them to consider the serious dangers and consequences of gun violence that lead states to regulate firearms. No, it's not. That's not the job of the justices to look at regulation. Your job as justices is to preserve the Constitution. And this is what happens when we get activists on the Supreme Court. So again, the best thing Trump did when in office was put three justices in place. Because who knows where this would have gone if it were different. You know, one of the other things they talk about here is, you know, they talk about a lot of the mass shootings, okay? And they mention Buffalo. Well, that's in New York. So this gentleman in Buffalo had to follow New York laws to get his weapons, right? Clearly the laws didn't stop him or any of the other people illegally carrying weapons and shooting people in New York from carrying out a crime. The law-abiding people that have permits, they're not out there shooting people. Why that is so difficult for them to understand, I don't get. But they're trying to make this whole argument. Dissent is trying to make this whole argument about, you know, what these laws can stop some of this carnage. And then they cite in their argument, they cite New York. And it's like, it's in the very state that has this regulation. And it didn't work because it doesn't stop those with malicious intent. This next paragraph is, there's something profound in here. And I want you to think about it as I read it. The dangers possessed by firearms, well, I want you to think about it and ask yourself, what's missing? The dangers posed by firearms can take many forms. Newspapers report mass shootings occurring at an entertainment district in Philadelphia, 3 dead, 11 injured. An elementary school in Uvalde, 21 dead. A supermarket in Buffalo, 10 dead. A series of spas in Atlanta, Georgia, 8 dead. A busy street in an entertainment district of Dayton, Ohio, 9 dead. A nightclub in Orlando, 50 dead and 53 injured. A church in Charleston, 9 dead. A movie theater in Aurora, 12 dead. An elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut, 26 dead, and many, many more. Something very interesting to me was not included in that list. The most catastrophic mass shooting we've ever had in this country, in Las Vegas, why is that not listed? It just seems very odd to me. You'd think that you would list, why, if you're going to put this list of mass shootings, and you also think that you would list Columbine, which was the first school shooting, really, that was a major one that kind of, you know, led to this epidemic of these things happening. But it's very interesting that Las Vegas is not in here, and that that case has really seemed to just die out into the abyss of nowhere. Now, I don't have a theory, and I'm not part of the tinfoil hat brigade, but it's kind of hard to not start to wonder what's going on when something like that just goes quiet. And it's not even listed in something as significant as this by the Supreme Court. Right? I mean, it's weird that that would be omitted when they're trying to list examples of, you know, catastrophic gun violence, mass shooting violence. And here's the next line I saw in there that caught my interest was this one. A study of 30,000 protests between January 20th and June 2021 found that armed protests were nearly six times more likely to become violent or destructive than unarmed protests. Okay. So who in this armed protests or these protests where there were people armed, who committed these acts of violence? Because people might right away go to Rittenhouse, but he was lawfully carrying a firearm and he acted in self-defense. So that's not, that one doesn't hold merit. But when you look at the one instance where there was like cross-party violence anyways, the one in Portland where that Antifa douche that ended up getting mowed down by federal marshals, he was illegally carrying and shot people. So he didn't obey the laws that existed. The laws didn't stop him from carrying a pistol. And he had been arrested just a few days prior for carrying a firearm at the protest. And then he went back a few days later and had a firearm again and shot and killed somebody this time in Milwaukee. When the Floyd protests were going on here, there was a police officer shot by one of the BLM protesters. Now, we're an open carry state, and you can have a concealed carry permit. Typically, in those environments, though, there are some restrictions in protests or assemblies like that. There can be further restrictions put on, but the person that did the shooting wasn't legally carrying. They weren't supposed to have a firearm. And that's, so they mentioned these protests. Yeah. But in these, all these instances where these people are armed and committing these crimes, 99% of the time they're breaking the law before they even commit the atrocity. They're not supposed to have the gun in the first place, but they do because the law didn't stop them. This last line I'm going to mention about this case, you wait, because the liberals argue it this way, they're going to argue it the other way, maybe as soon as tomorrow, but as soon as Roe comes out. So Kagan states in this paragraph, the primary difference between the court's view and mine is that I believe the amendment allows states to take account of the serious problems posed by gun violence that I just described. I fear that the court's interpretation ignores these significant dangers and leaves states without the ability to address them. Okay, two things. Number one, it's a constitutionally guaranteed right to all of the people. So if a state would infringe on that, it is the federal government's job. It's the court's job, the Supreme Court's job, to set that straight, that state straight. It is a constitutional right. Now, Kagan says, well, the states should have control over this matter. That's not what they're going to say about abortion when that case comes out. They're going to argue the exact opposite point. And the abortion right isn't a constitutional right. People just feel it's implied by the 14th Amendment, which is a stretch. The right to keep and bear arms is explicit in the Constitution. It is explicitly stated as an explicit right that people, all people in the country have. Abortion is not an explicit right. It's an implicit inferation that, yes, should be left to the states. But they're not going to argue the states for state powers when that case comes down. So watch for that, because they're going to completely contradict their arguments here. So that's how the liberals work on everything. Completely unrelated to this, but think of the fact that how they all talk about, the progressives generally talk about how horrible this country is and how ugly it is and how it's full of racists and white supremacists and it's awful, this awful place. Yet they want us to welcome all of these people into the country without question, because to give them an opportunity for a better life. We should welcome them in to give them a better life. Why do you want to welcome them into such a big shithole? I don't. They step on themselves with every philosophy that they speak of. It's insane. And if you're watching this recording on Rumble or YouTube, please hit the thumbs up button and subscribe. You can support the show by going to rucksackradio.com, just by sharing it on all of your platforms. Really appreciate the support in keeping the show going right now, especially in these crazy times of Bidenflation. So that's how I spent my day today, and then perusing through some of the arguments and things on Twitter. And I guess, you know, I'm kind of glad that I'm sitting in, well, day three now of my Twitter timeout, because I probably would got permanently suspended today by taking I got a 7-day Jenny in the thing. I had a week timeout. So for all I did, I think I mentioned it in the last show, maybe, I can't remember, but all I did, Andy Ngo had posted an article about a teacher being arrested for raping a 13-year-old, I think. And my comment was simply, castration would seem appropriate here. That's it. And yeah, I got dinged for wishing painful or harmful things on people. Fucking stupid. Number one, I didn't wish it on anybody. I just suggested something very vague. Didn't direct it, you know, in any way or call for it to happen. And number two, it's just stupid. It's just so stupid. They want to protect protect pedophiles. That's how Twitter is. But I did reach out to a few places today, including the New York News or New York Daily News editorial board. My God, these people. They put an article out today. It says, "Shot through the heart, the Supreme Court radically expands gun rights, a decision that will cost lives in New York City and elsewhere." They expand gun rights. They just preserved a constitutional right that every human, including you fucking low IQ idiots at the New York Daily News, it's including a right that you have. What gets me is how you people want to strip yourselves of your own rights. Who does that? Who is so weak, so insecure, so feeble-minded? Who is so much of a coward that they want to strip themselves of their own rights? Who wants to be a slave? That's what gets me. I'm going to read this garbage article of theirs, because I tried so hard to get one of them to get on the show with me. Nothing. Their article, "Using a garbled reading of history as a crutch, the U.S. Supreme Court's supposed textualist conservatives have just managed to codify a cartoon cutout version of the Second Amendment. We mince no words. This will cost the lives of civilians and police officers, as almost anyone in New York City will be free to carry a gun." No, that's not necessarily true at all. "At a time when the proliferation of weapons is already killing a record number of Americans, the nearly absolutist right of self-defense the majority canonizes will become a right to societal suicide." God, these people are just, oh my God. It's just 27 simple words written in 1789. "A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed." But Justice Clarence Thomas, writing for the 6-member majority, brazenly ignores the first clause and renders the second in the most expansive terms imaginable. No, He just read it as it has existed and was intended to be for the entire history of our country. And again, the first part of that is not a prerequisite to the second half of it. With all of the incisiveness of a junior high school student, he states, we know of no other constitutional right that an individual may exercise only after demonstrating to government officers some special need. He's absolutely right in that. How is that a junior high school type statement? That's the New York Daily News. I saw this. I don't even know that I've ever read anything from them before, but this is one of the most garbage. They might as well be like, Axios or one of those other fucking weird liberal lunatic fringe extremist radical progressive garbage outlets that deals only in emotions and not facts. They say by this principle, there's just about no weapon that can be restricted in hardly any place, so long as a man with his finger on the trigger can credibly assert the need to protect himself. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly what it means. That's exactly what it's supposed to mean. It's exactly what it was always intended to mean. It's most appallingly, though, the challenge was to a New York law the majority doesn't give two shakes about the implications of its absolutism for the nation's most populous city, which happens to be battling an upsurge in shootings due in large part to the easy availability of weapons. Wait a minute. If you're saying that you've had this law and it's been so great for so long, how has it made weapons easy to get? That's right. Am I missing something here? Am I wrong? If your argument is that this law has done so much to help keep people safe or keep weapons out, how is it now? How are people so easily getting weapons? It's absolutely crazy. So the article then goes on and says, they just say the word subway doesn't appear any once in Thomas's 63 pages. Well, no, it doesn't have anything to do with anything. The article kind of finishes up. It says conservatives typically revere states' rights. Here they obliterate them. No, because it's a constitutional right. Conservatives, the constitutional rights supersede state rights. Constitutional rights, the 10th Amendment is where states get their rights from that are not already designated by the Constitution. It's amazing how stupid and ignorant these people are. This is conservatives typically decry those who speak of a living constitution. Here they choose one that licenses dying. It says at least the majority affirms the theoretical right for localities to forbid public carriage in sensitive places. Until the next legal challenges anyway. No, it's always been you can't carry in like courthouses, you can't carry at schools. There's a sign that says don't carry here, it's gun-free zone. We see how well that works. New York must immediately designate subways, buses, places of worship, Times Square, Union Square, Central Park, and all other places where large numbers of people gather as sensitive places. But it will be one thing to put up no gun signs outside subway stations, and quite another for the police to actually enforce such restrictions. They said, just put signs up. Yes, that's their answer. So there you have it, though. That's some of the majority opinion. That's some of the dissenting opinion. That's some of the idiot response that's out there, which is just, it's absolutely insane. New York City Mayor Eric Adams promises to use every legal resource to fight back against the Supreme Court's decision. No, it's the Supreme Court, dumbass. They made this decision. They have the right. And that's it. I lost my page. Sorry, but the news, if you go through the news, there's just a whole lot of headlines on the Supreme Court decision on guns. They just go on and on and on to, as you would expect, liberal headlines to be in this case. So tomorrow there's 9 Supreme Court cases remaining. 2 big ones in there, of course, are the Dobbs case that will impact Roe v. Wade. And there's also a case in there of a high school coach that is suing, yes, being fired, his religious liberties being infringed for, I mean, he was fired for praying at the 50-yard line after a football game. So that those are 2 big cases that are coming out. Also, there's one in there on what power the government has with certain to administrate certain environmental regulations. And there's also a Remain in Mexico case in there. They go on recess in June, at the end of June. Typically, sometimes cases can spill into July. They only have 9 left. They've been releasing the last couple of opinion days. They've been releasing anywhere from 4 to 5 to 6 cases. So I suspect they might release 4 tomorrow, leaving 5 for next week. I don't know if we'll get the Dobbs case tomorrow or not. But we'll probably get, we're going to get it before the end of next week, but it's possible we could get it tomorrow. So that's that. So that's what I have today. Okay. So yeah. So 8 p.m. Central tomorrow. Does that work for you, Jenny? He's in the chat, so I went, okay. all right. Yeah, let's... okay, that's where we're at. That's all I got for tonight. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your night. Check out the show's website, rucksackradio.com. For recent articles there and also ways you can support the show. Really appreciate the help in this time. And appreciate your Patreon. To patriotism, friends, there's no substitute for educated and passionate patriots who value our sacred principles of liberty. Take action and preserve them. An honor to share your company. Have a great Friday tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow night. Rock on.